a little bit delayed, and we apologize, but the Best Wrestling Show period is back for another week of some insightful breakdowns and a little bit of a know-how from two guys that once upon a time lived a life in the business. I'm Mike Mansouri, joined alongside the Archer of Infamy himself, Double M Mark Madden. Mark, how are you, brother?
I'm the original Archer of Infamy, and I apologize for nothing. Technical glitches, not our fault. We make do. We move on, and at least we have AEW Dynamite, and for that matter, NXT to talk about, although I don't think either show was all that memorable.
Yeah, it was interesting, Mark. I thought coming off of last week, where both shows showed an increase, especially AEW pulling a 1.2 million viewers. I think it's their second highest since they debuted Dynamite way back when, and NXT jumping up into the over the 800,000 range. You know, great showing for both shows last week. This week, we kind of rode back into cruise control and just kind of, you know, progressing your stories, or not so much, if you will. But Mark, I want to jump back and talk about probably something obviously internally that rocked us in the world of wrestling, and that was the announcement of our own Mr. Pat McAfee joining SmackDown on Fox as the new color commentator alongside Michael Cole.
Yeah, I thought Pat did a great job the first night out. And if he sucked, I would say so. And when he does, I'll be there waiting. But so far, so good. I thought he had a slight heel bent. Not overwhelming, but slight. I thought he worked very well with Michael Cole. I think he advanced the storylines. I don't know, and maybe you do, Mike, I don't know if he had Vince in his ear, who he had in his ear, because that's the way they do things in WWE, where producers yammering away in the announcer's ear.
Not
necessarily.
Not necessarily true.
I wouldn't tolerate it. And Mick Foley quit announcing because of it. But I really don't know if Pat was subject to that. But at any rate, I thought he did a brilliant job. And he was very self-critical afterwards, which I think is good, because that means he's going to work to get better, like Pat McAfee always does.
Well, and that's rooted in the athlete and the performer that Pat is, right? Is that you're always critical of the performance, and you're looking to be better than you were the last time you were out. But going back, so that myth, Mark, about talent being overproduced in their ear, I think is something that's been greatly exaggerated by folks that have not exactly fared that well in the commentary position. Is Vince in people's ear during a show? Yes. Is the producer, you know, such as myself or Kevin Dunn, whoever's doing the show? Yeah, they're in your ear, but not to the point where they're basically holding your hand and narrating and walking you through a show. It's not like you're a fucking sock puppet and someone's got their hand up your ass and telling you what to say. That is a misconception that has been over-exaggerated throughout the years. And it's funny, the ones who typically are the ones to say it are the ones that have failed miserably at it.
Well, with all due respect, Mike, you were there, so I'll take your word for it, but that's far from what I heard.
Yeah,
I heard that the sock puppet theory was well in vogue, and like I said, it made Mick Foley quit.
Mark,
and Mick Foley can certainly talk into a microphone.
Mark, telephone, tell a friend, tell a wrestler. You know that,
yeah,
just as well as
like
I do.
Said, you were there, and I take your word for it, but let me tell you what Vince should say in the announcer's ear. Nothing at all. Okay, if you hired the guy and you trust the guy to help shepherd a show on primetime TV, let him do it. And if he can't do it, get somebody else to do it. But trust your instincts as far as hiring him, and then let the announcer trust his instincts.
Yeah, I will say, you know, I do agree with that. I think, you know, I think you do have to kind of sprinkle a little bit every once in a while, because look, no one knows the stories and where they're going probably better than Vince does. So inevitably, you're going to need that sort of sprinkle. And look, a lot of announcers that step into the booth, and you're going to see it now with a lot of the new folks that roll in, you know, look, psychology and storytelling sometimes isn't their best strength. And especially when it comes to that quote unquote analyst role. So you do need a little hand holding and a little guidance there. But yeah, I do agree. If you're being hired, there has to be that sort of trust, because if you were trusted enough to get that paycheck, you should be trusted enough to do your job.
Well, I agree to disagree, because I just don't think an announcer should be produced at all. If he messes something up, then correct him, let him correct that. But trust the announcer, you hired him. And also, I saw Vince announce. I grew up watching Vince announce. He wasn't nearly as good as I'm sure he remembers he was.
No, and he's the first one to put himself down for his work when he was in there.
Well, good. He's right about that.
But I think overall, Mark, you know, anyone who feels that they shouldn't be produced, look, JR, Jim Ross, loves to be produced. JR knows how to tell a story, but he also knows that you got to have that producing, because you just got it helps your announcer to have someone in their ear to let them know where you're going, what's next, and what we're going to do.
See, I would venture to guess that Jim says he likes to be produced because he thinks that's what he should say. I doubt very much he wants someone in his ear while he's doing his job.
Agree to disagree. But back to Dr. McAfee. So, Pat, strong showing. I agree. I thought for the maiden voyage, especially compared to what Adnan Virk did on Raw the Monday prior, Pat knocked it out of the park, man. You know, like you said, a slight heel lean, which was good because it kind of gave the audience a flavor for what he's going to be without being overbearing and you know, overwhelming with it. It was just the right amount. And then, you know, look, we've talked about it before on the show. Working with such a strong lead like Michael Cole is only going to help Pat, you know, to get better and to grow and to really adapt to this really quickly, which Pat has shown in every facet of the business that he's been able to adapt very quickly in ring, on a mic, in commentary now, you know, even in the panels. I mean, look, when we brought Pat into WWE years back to take part in the NXT TakeOver panels, you know, the big thing that we were looking for is we wanted an outside voice that was genuine in their love and their knowledge for the business. NXT, just like AEW, it resonates very well with the hardcore fan base. And if you bring anybody in that is disingenuous in their love and their appreciation and even their knowledge of the business, because that shines through very clearly, Mark, on camera and in someone's work, they'll eat you alive. But from the moment Pat stepped in, you knew that this guy was a natural fit for the business. And I think that's why he was so accepted and what honestly led to his success as he was just trying all these different ventures within the wrestling business itself.
No question about that. You have to love it. You almost have to grow up, not in it, but with it.
Yeah.
As Pat McAfee did. I got to say, though, the fact that Pat leans slight heel like Corey Graves does on Raw and did on SmackDown, that helps so much. Every announced team needs a guy who at least leans heel. Case in point. AEW has three really good announcers.
Yeah.
No heels. The best they're announcing is, and as evidenced by this week's Dynamite, was when Taz jumps on. Because Taz adds that bent, that heel flavor. And even though it's way too many voices on mic, I mean, three's too many, four is ridiculous, Taz adds a lot. So Pat adds a lot. In a two-man booth with Pat and Cole, you just can't beat that.
No, not at all. The two-man booth is just, it's cleaner. Look at all the great announcing combos that, you know, come to people's minds when they think of, you know, the journey through the business. And it's usually the two-man that stands in front. Nobody ever sat back and said a three-man was the most exemplary, you know, just way to go. You know, Lawler and JR, right? You know, you can go to Gorilla and Bobby, Vince and Jesse, like all these different combinations of
Gordon Soley and Roddy Piper.
Gordon Soley and Piper was awesome. And, you know, it's a shame that folks didn't get a lot more of that. Dive into a YouTube and find some old school Gordon Soley, Roddy Piper together in the booth. Just unbelievable. And it's even going back to FCW or Championship Wrestling for Florida, I just can't remember off the top of my head. Gordon, whenever he had anybody in the booth, would make those guys look like $1 million.
Yeah, and vice versa, too. But the comparison to the two-man booth and three-man booth, Mike, I was in both in WCW. It was me and Tony Schiavone to start. Then when Russo and Bischoff took over creative, it became me, Hudson, and Schiavone.
Yeah.
And I had no complaints with either. Tony and Scott are exemplary pros and much better than me. But when you have a three-man booth, you're trying to get your shit in.
Agreed.
Period. Because there's not much room.
No, there's not much room, and everyone's just kind of looking for that opportune time to sneak something in and get their shit in. And as you said, sometimes it's just so crowded, Mark, that by the time you do get your beat in, it's usually the moment's passed.
Well, right. Let me make it real clear. Speaking from my experience, whether it's good or bad for the show, I am going to get my shit in. Because that's what's best for me, and that's how I stay on the show. But with the two-man booth, everything has time to breathe. You can use silence as a dramatic device. You can lay out. With a three-man booth, nobody lays out. It's like, okay, here's my chance. The minute things quiet down a little bit. And one thing we'll talk about, I'm sure, within the course of this show, watching Dynamite, that show in general doesn't have time to breathe. it is just so busy, 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 busy that nothing good that happens ever has time to breathe. And in case in point, Jungle Boy and Darby Allin had a very good match at the end of Dynamite.
Love that main event.
It was a great match, and they're two great performers, and it's long since passed due that they got an opportunity like that, especially Jungle Boy. But the minute the match is over, Scorpio Sky and Ethan Page hit the ring. The minute the match is over. And it made you forget how good a match it was. It didn't have time to sink in. That show should have gone off the air with, I don't know, Jungle Boy and Darby Allin embracing, shaking hands, Jungle Boy raising Darby Allin's arm. I don't know, something cliched, but it would have been better than what happened. And then the Murder Hawk Monster runs in, and I'm even more confused. And it's even busier.
A lot of schmoz at the end. And, you know, the problem with that schmoz is, Mark, and, you know, in terms of just the busyness and the confusion about it, is that, you know, it wasn't like an interesting cliffhanger in terms of just what's next. It got lost in the shuffle. And you and I were both pretty vocal on Twitter last night, just kind of watching the show. And there were great elements to last night's Dynamite. And there were some elements that left me kind of scratching my head. There was aftermath in pretty much every segment on Dynamite last night. It seemed like after every match, there was some sort of run in or physicality or interruption, etc. And to your point, nothing really had an opportunity to breathe. And in processing the show, it was just very, you know, this is happening, holy shit, we're going here, but all right, now we're on to something else. They were just kind of all over the place. And I don't know if that's on production, if it's on creative, it's on a combo of both, or whatever the case may be.
But I think I know.
There's no flow, Mark. There's no flow. And then on top of it,
Booker wants to get all his friends on TV every week.
Yeah,
and it happened again.
And look,
the gang's in Jacksonville starring Daniel Day-Lewis. Everybody has to be on TV every week so everybody's happy, or at least they think they're happy, or at least they're happy for right now.
Well, it's funny. You mentioned the gangs of Jacksonville, right? And obviously one of the – probably the front and foremost most I guess the heavily promoted storyline is going into your May 5th Dynamite, where you've got the Blood and Guts match, right? The Inner Circle versus Pinnacle, Jericho and MJF's respective factions. You've got this big match, obviously, that's centered around these two groups. It seems to me, Mark, that you're taking away from the importance of the match by having all of this extra, you know, gang warfare, if you will, happening in the periphery and on the show. Every segment, again, it just seemed like involved, you know, whether it be a faction promo or a faction running or a faction this, you're taking away from the importance and the highlight going into the next big promoted show that you have, and that being a Dynamite on May 5th with these guys in a gimmick match that should have all the attention. In the old days for War Games, you didn't see the Horsemen and, you know, Sting's crew, you know, doing their thing, but then every other fucking group on the outside making noise as well. You're just taking away from your big story.
Well, that's because there weren't any other groups on the outside except for very peripheral ones. When I look at the War Games match, excuse me, Blood and Guts, and by the way, Blood and Guts is not nearly as good a name as War Games, but I understand trademark, copyright, etc.
Shout out Dream.
But when I look at the Pinnacle against the Inner Circle, and then the next segment has a big sketch with the Elite in their trailer, I think, why aren't the Elite in War Games?
Right.
Why aren't they involved? They're just as viable a group. There's just too many groups, because that's lazy booking. Too many groups is lazy booking, period. I don't care what anybody says, it's lazy booking.
Well, to your point, it's you're using it as a crutch to get, you know, representation for these not used talents on your show. And it's hurting what should be an epic build between these two groups that have such amazing front men on each side and then an awesome supporting cast on both teams. It's just hurting it. And, you know, what's your plan going forward? You know, at this case, the way you're building.
I don't know that it's hurting, Mike. I get where you're coming from. I think it's confusing. And if that translates to hurting, then yeah. I mean, I think you're absolutely right about that. And you're right in saying, and I want to back, Jericho and MJF are brilliant. And they make the groups brilliant. By the way, you know, it's weird. Do Axe and Smash or Axel and Slash, the greatest tag team ever, just ask them, do they ever get to talk anymore? Or do they never talk again because MJF's their mouthpiece? For God's sakes, they even let Wardlow talk over those two.
Yeah.
And Sean Spears, He's backdrop. That's all he is.
You know, man, it's those guys, you know, Dax and Cash, I know him as, you know, Dash and Scott, but those guys are unbelievably talented on the mic as well. They're a very old school throwback in tag team wrestling, you know, just overall, and they can talk. They can talk very, very well. And look, maybe that's not the plan in the build right now. That promo, Mark, to me, a lot of folks were praising it last night. And again, I'm a firm believer in MJF, the character and all the potential this young man has, you know, representing a fellow Long Islander, but to me it fell flat. You're advertising this big sit down with Jim Ross going into last night's show, and I was talking about it with a young man who writes for MLW. We were kind of going back and forth on Twitter last night, and to me that Pinnacle promo fell flat, Mark. You know, the way it was advertised and the way it was set up, if you're doing this pre-recorded stylized thing, you didn't need Jim Ross. All they did was use JR to basically set up the meatball and let MJF eat. You should have had these guys cut that same promo. And if you're trying to get over what this group is, which is basically the modern day horsemen, you know, these guys that are the elite and the dress, you know, no pun intended there, that dress sharp and their heels and they're great. But put them in a situation that shines and just let them be them and also keep them away. You know, put them on a jet, put them in a limo, let them cut a cool stylized promo. But that sit down to me just kind of fell flat, even in spite of MJF's awesome performance. It was just a flat response to that Jericho promo from 2 weeks prior.
I don't disagree at all. And where's Tully? Why wasn't Tully there?
Right.
I mean, that's the pinnacle. The pinnacle includes Tully. Tully is the tide of the horsemen. He has to be there. Now, maybe there was a legitimate reason. I hope they didn't just opt him out of that one, but Tully needs to be there. And it's so easy to see where this stuff's going, too. Like, you know, Wardlow said, Jericho, you made a mistake when you mentioned me. Well, now Jericho gets to beat Wardlow real soon.
Right.
I mean, as a build-up to whatever. Maybe Jericho, MJF is a singles match. So it could have been better. MJF was great. It could have been better. It came off as very clumsy with those guys sitting there like you know, in these cheap folding chairs, just looking at MJF say something. And because they didn't talk, Axe and Smash and Sean Spears came off as, again,
they were lackeys. Just
backdrop. Just yeah. Impotent. Whereas Jericho, when he does the promo, everybody talks a little, and he involves everybody in what he's speaking. You know, so maybe that's the master over the student. Maybe it's Jericho being just a little better than MJF on the given Wednesday.
Yeah, and hey, look, to me, I thought Santana and Ortiz, man, get those guys some more mic time. My God, just two talented dudes that I'm glad are kind of getting an opportunity to shine here, working with Jericho in the Inner Circle in this big angle. You know, that Jericho Inner Circle promo, Mark, you know, again, this is something that I took away watching the show last night. To me, it almost took away whatever little heat was generated by that MJF promo. It kind of stepped on it because, again, it was good and it was in front of the live house. But it took away a little bit of the luster for me. And look, I think eventually next week the heels have to get their heat back. But I wonder if last night's show would have been better served not having the Inner Circle represented. And maybe you even do that Pinnacle promo in front of the house.
Or maybe do one this week and one the next week.
Yeah.
I understand there's only limited time to get ready for War Games, but I don't know. I mean, when your big events aren't pay-per-views, except, you know, they have a few, when your big events are primarily, you know, your regular TV show gussied up with a fancy name, it makes it a little more difficult. And I think they mostly deal really well with that. But speaking of giving the mic to Santana Ortiz, and I've been banging this drum on this program since it started, Mike, how about letting them wrestle more?
Yeah.
You see, that's the problem with AEW. Tony Khan wants to have a whole bunch of wrestling friends. And I'm sorry, that's the truth. That's what I see. A whole bunch of wrestling fans, friends rather. So his roster's way too big because he wants a lot of friends. And then he puts them all on TV, and the guys who should be on TV, who should be talking, who should be working, don't get nearly enough exposure. Santana and Ortiz have barely wrestled. Why not? They're the best, arguably the best tag team there, and certainly one of the top two or three.
They're so good. They're so good. And there's
well,
a mix.
You never know it, Mike, because they never wrestle.
No, and there's a great mix of tags there, Mark, for them to kind of be put on, you know, showcase and to kind of get them over, right? Like, if you're going to build to your War Games match, maybe not have your Inner Circle guys cut a promo, but yeah, let Santana and Ortiz go out there and have, even if it's a squash match, Mark, and just beat the dog shit out of another team. You know, you don't necessarily always have to have counter for counter, promo for promo on the show. And it seems like they just kind of reached back into the well of what worked with the Inner Circle and Jericho and let those guys talk. And look, that was a great, you know, it was a great promo segment. It wasn't as good as what Jericho did, you know, when they were head to head with NXT TakeOver, but let things breathe. You don't have to always revisit what works, because what happens when you keep doing that, Mark, and you know just as well as I do, is that it stops working.
Absolutely. And it has stopped working. You need to get your talent, your big money players, your TV guys out there more frequently than AEW does. If I ran AEW, the first thing I'd do is say, look, the 30 worst people here, you weren't ready for TV in the first place, you're all fired. That's the nature of the business. You know, if you're not good enough, you get got, to quote Ron Killings. And then after that, I would feature the guys who should be on TV. I mean, Mike, when QT Marshall's gang is out there, it's painful. When the Dark Order is out there, it's painful. Then with Brody Lee, God rest his soul, that was one thing. This is painful. And I'll tell you what, Hangman Page is brilliant. Him with the Dark Order does him no favors.
No, it doesn't. But you can see now, especially last night, they were hitting it pretty hard in terms of branding Hangman Page, if you will. I guess he's the number one ranked wrestler in AEW right now on their, based on their standings, which I actually do like the standings. There's an appreciation that I have for that. You know, and I like the way it's playing out. I love the way it played out last night after the women's championship match between Hikaru Shida and Ty Conti, which was actually, I actually like that match, Mark. Ty Conti, I've been a big fan of since she was at NXT. I was actually surprised when she was released. I think that that young lady's got some star power there, and she's a legitimate badass with her martial arts background. But seeing Britt come out last night after Hikaru Shida retained the title and just do the reveal on the board that she's now ascended to number one ranking status, I like that it automatically gives you you have a nice way to subliminally, subtly, and without being overt, build a story of a new contender on the rise without shoving it down people's throats.
Yeah, Britt's tremendous. And I've been thinking about what you've been saying, and that she might have to go to greener pastures, not greener money-wise, but actually not greener, to use wrestling terminology, in terms of talent she needs to face to reach her full potential. You're right about that. I'm not sure it can happen there, although when I see a match like we did last night with the women, that gives me hope for that division and for Britt in AEW.
Yeah, you worry, though, right? Like, depending on how long she stays there, and unless they start getting her, you know, some more experienced folks to work with and to learn from. I mean, look, they've got great coaches over there for the women. I know Dustin Rhodes works a lot with the women of AEW, and he is a phenomenal coach and even still a phenomenal performer into his 50s. Dustin's still great. He looks probably the best he's ever looked in his career. But for Britt, you know, if the opportunity comes to make the jump to WWE, if she ever decides to do that, you know, you wonder if, you know, the building blocks that she's had at AEW, if that's going to hurt her when she transitions over to where the talent level is, you know, clearly surpassed the AEW women's roster.
I'm not sure WWE would use her as well as AEW has either. I think that would be a legitimate worry for her going there. Not that they would, you know, totally whiff on her, but she's clearly very valued and used in a big spot in AEW. So as always, Mike, it'll be determined by who pays more.
Amen. The paycheck always speaks the best and the loudest, doesn't it?
On this show, I wouldn't know, but yeah, in general.
So, Double M, I want to go back to last week, you know, and talk about, you know, so obviously the big news of Pat and his arrival on SmackDown, you know, huge. But another big piece of business on the WWE side were the folks that left, and not left of their own volition. WWE had their annual, if you will, post-WrestleMania roster cut. And there were some names on there that came as a surprise. There were some names on there that folks weren't surprised by. And there was overall a very hostile reaction on the internet and a lot of vitriol towards Kevin Dunn, the executive producer at WWE. You and I were both kind of talking about it, and I saw your Twitter that Friday night when Kevin was trending. Wild time. Let's talk about it.
Well, first off, they didn't fire anybody that was worth a damn.
Samoa Joe.
So if you want to react on Twitter negatively to me, go ahead and do that. Now, let me offer a disclaimer, though, Mike. Samoa Joe is a great in-ring performer, one of the best of his generation, but I assume he's not cleared to work medically, or he would have been.
I don't know the particulars around Joe and the whole where he stands right now after his concussions. But man, Mark, I've always thought Joe's had a lot of value, and he's a huge asset in what he can do behind the scenes and even on camera as an announced talent.
Announcing, he was mediocre at best. As far as him being a teacher or a mentor, I do not know. But if he could still work, he'd be a valuable addition to somebody. Although I don't know that AEW needs a 42-year-old guy. They just hired Christian, who's even older than that. So, I mean, Joe, maybe Ring of Honor is the place for him to go back to his roots. But, and I'm not putting Joe down. Again, great performer. You know what I watched the other day?
What's that?
His shoot style match with Kurt Angle at TNA.
Oh, yeah.
Which was absolutely brilliant. So I'm a big fan of Joe, but I understand why they cut him if he can't work. Everybody else, dime a dozen talent, nickel dime. Like, I know the Iconics, you know, got a lot of heat on Twitter, I guess because Kevin Dunn supposedly said he didn't get Billy Kay. Nobody gets Billy Kay. She couldn't draw a dime if you dipped her in super glue and dragged her through a bank vault. She's okay. Peyton Royce is okay. But you don't, you know, lose steam as a company if you fire the occasional person who's only okay. And everybody else was below okay.
Well, it's to your point, what you were saying with AEW, right? There's too many on that roster, especially too many that really have no business being on any sort of programming right now. They should still be out there, you know, cutting their teeth and learning what works, you know, and whatever the case may be, working through the indies, etc. And yeah, at WWE, you kind of have to trim through the fat, if you will, to get to where you need to be. I still think in terms of Joe, though, that was a big mistake in letting him go. The guy's an asset, and I don't think that he was put in the best position to shine, Mark, working with Tom Phillips and Byron Saxton on Raw, because that wasn't a very good announced team for him to be part of. You saw the difference in Joe's performance. Again, speaking to the strength of Michael Cole, when Joe worked with Michael Cole at WrestleMania, you know, and even the work that Joe was doing at NXT, filling in, you know, he was a last minute fill-in. I believe they were supposed to have Arash Marchese from the LA Times out, you know, doing stuff for TakeOver, and Joe wound up stepping in Arash's place. And, you know, I like Joe as the broadcaster because, you know, he brings credibility, obviously, with his in-ring background, and he's just a guy that just gets it. And you hear that term a lot, of being somebody that just gets it. And Joe is definitely one of those guys that has potential upside. And look, I'm sure as a, you know, a wrestling producer slash agent, the guy can, you know, the wonders that he can do working with younger talent and bringing them up. Because again, on both companies, that's what's missing. You're missing that experience and that veteran that can really help bring young guys up.
Well, everything you say, I don't disagree with about Samoa Joe. But I also ask myself the tangible question. Is WWE clearly worse off for having let Samoa Joe go?
I don't think.
And the answer is no.
No, but just like anything, they let go. They'll be fine.
You're cutting payroll. And I want to get back to the Iconics because Twitter wet its pants. Wrestling media, quote unquote media, wet its pants when they got let go. I challenge anyone to tell me what makes them special. They are just in the pack of mediocre women performers. Maybe they were somebody's favorite on Twitter. Maybe they were somebody's favorite in, I don't know, WrestleZone or one of those sites. But nothing makes them special, and I define anyone to tell me what does.
No, you hit the nail right on the head, Mark. I mean, look, Billy Kay developed a little bit of she developed an entertaining character with this little run that she had leading into WrestleMania. And I think that kind of threw folks off the fact that she was in a, you know, I'm not going to call it a featured match, but she was in a match at WrestleMania in that women's gauntlet, that tag match, and then gets cut a few days later. Peyton Royce, Mark, you know, a lot of folks threw some support behind her after this impassioned promo that she cut on Raw Talk. She gets an opportunity to back up her words in a match against Asuka, and she shit the bed. It was not her best showing, you know, especially when you talk that big. And that's what's, you know, that's where a lot of folks find themselves, you know, getting into trouble, is that they write a check with their mouths that their asses can't cash. And Peyton Royce did just that.
Well, here's the thing about everybody that got released. and especially the Iconics, and Joe too. You see, I respect Joe. I think the Iconics are just, if they had never worked in wrestling at all, wrestling would be none the wiser. But I really respect Joe, okay? But this goes for everybody that got fired. If they are the special talents their supporters say they are, then they will have no problem moving forward because somebody else will employ, recognize, and reward that talent. They got no problem if what their supporters say is true.
No,
but in most cases, it is not.
Yeah, I mean, well, time will tell that, right? I imagine everyone's got some sort of 90-day no compete on the back end of their release. So, you know, I think it's July or whatever, mid July, we'll find out whose phone was ringing, whose phone wasn't ringing.
For example, Mike, me, when I got let go by WCW, my phone didn't ring, and nobody shed a tear for me. Of course, they were never really going to shed a tear for me, were they? I kind of set myself up for that. But, you know, the market dictates. And right now, with AEW, with Impact, with Ring of Honor, and with WWE, there's a lot of market out there to dictate. And if you can't work for any one of those, then you stink.
Those are the three viable options, right? I mean, you do have, look, Ring of Honor's out there, and they're throwing decent money around.
Well, no, Ring of Honor, Impact, WWE and AEW.
Well, and I think, Mark, now you got to add a number five. Hats off to the team down at MLW. Those guys just announced a deal with Vice TV. So, you know, look, MLW's been not under the radar. They've been on the radar, obviously nowhere near the WWE AEW level. But that's a group that makes a lot of noise, Mark, and a lot of folks have come through there that have made a name for themselves in the business.
Oh, no question. And I omitted them just based on carelessness on my part. So yeah, there's five options. But again, my point stands, Mike. If you can't get employed in wrestling in this country, you stink.
I agree.
Or you just don't want to. Some guys make more money just working the indies. And I got to tell you, I think a fairly viable option is Impact and indies. Because a lot of those Impact guys work a lot of indies, like Josh Alexander and Ace Austin. And I would guess they do okay. And I think, by the way, that's where a lot of those fired by WWE will wind up at Impact. And for the betterment of them, because Impact has done a lot with some less heralded performers. They have resurrected some guys. I think they've done really well down there. I'm a big fan of D'Amore and Callis. And I can't name their creative panel off the top of my head, but they do a real good job. By the way, on my radio show today in Pittsburgh, my guest will be Don Callis.
Oh.
Talking about title versus title, which we're going to talk about, Swan versus Omega. So if you want to check that out, that's WXDX.com.
Oof. Hey, that's going to be a hell of an interview for sure. A double M and Don Callis. Tell you what, there is intrigue in that match, and I kind of like how they're sort of building this up and really putting some steam behind. What is it, Mark? It's Impact Rebellion, I think it's called.
Yep, Sunday on pay per view, Swan versus Omega, title versus title. They are saying there will be a decisive ending. And I believe there probably will be. See, the problem with having a decisive ending to title versus title, where one guy wins both belts, isn't the aftermath. You know, the immediate aftermath. It's way down the line when you try to figure out a way to separate the titles again. That's when it gets clumsy. But I do expect one or the other will win. And Omega seems obvious, which makes me wonder.
Yeah, if there's a little bit of a pull the rug out from underneath the viewer and have Rich Swann walk away with both titles, that'd be a pretty interesting move. And look, it's something that doesn't hurt Kenny and his standing in AEW right now, because I feel like his story is that the title is irrelevant in that storyline that he's got going with Mox and Eddie Kingston.
Yeah, I think so too. And by the way, that skit they did last night where the truck rammed the trailer.
Yeah,
isn't that an incredible waste of money?
Yeah, but when you've got a lot of it,
I mean, you were WWE. Yeah, you're right. When you're Tony Khan, I mean, you know, if you own an NFL franchise that loses money and a Premier League team that gets relegated up and down like a friggin' yo-yo, I guess you can have a truck ram a trailer.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Let's just waste money for the sake of wasting it. Love the Mox and Kingston pairing, though, man. There is genuine entertainment there with those two, and you can tell that they're having a good time doing what they're doing, even if it's dumb.
Yeah. Again, I think it's a waste of money to have the truck ram the trailer. I thought it was a good segment. And as I've said before, I don't think Eddie Kingston sucks. I think, in fact, that he's growing on me. And he is being elevated by Mox and even helping Mox a bit as a sidekick. So, yeah, I think that's been a good pairing.
Hey, CM Punk just put him over recently on his Twitter. He said that Eddie's the best promo in the business right now. You agree with that?
Well, he's wrong about that, but okay.
You don't think Eddie's a solid promo?
I think he's a great promo. He's not the best in the business.
Who would you give that mantle to?
Jericho and MJF are both better just from last night's show.
Yeah, all right.
WWE, it's hard to tell because they're so scripted.
Yeah, but for the guys that do that have the reign, you know, Heyman is probably on the Mount Rushmore.
Oh, right, Heyman, because Heyman's not scripted.
Heyman, yeah.
I mean, they might think he is, but he's not.
Well, if he's scripted, it's his script.
Right.
Roman's a good promo. But yeah, I like Eddie Kingston, but I think Jericho is in his wheelhouse right now, and especially having a strong promo like MJF to play off of. It's very old school rockin' Jericho from Chris's arrival in WWE in terms of just the feel and having somebody to just have that verbal sparring match with. It's awesome.
Well, here's what Jericho and MJF are capable of, and Heyman's capable of, and John Cena was capable of, and of course, The Rock, Austin. And I know Kingston's not in WWE, but to me, the mark of being a brilliant promo, especially within the context of WWE, is can you do the Raw or SmackDown opening segment promo and be interesting and over for the entire segment? And Eddie Kingston, for lack of opportunity, admittedly, has yet to be able to prove he can do that, where all the other guys we've mentioned have proven.
Yeah, shout out Edge and Randy Orton, by the way.
Absolutely.
Two guys that can definitely fill those shoes. And, I would like to see Eddie Kingston get that opportunity. I think Eddie Kingston would be an interesting addition to a WWE roster should the opportunity ever presents itself because I like the idea of shaking things up, and he's certainly a presence that looks like can shake up the way your show runs.
I don't think they would perceive his value.
No, they wouldn't. They wouldn't get it.
It's the same as Britt Baker. I would love to see Britt Baker go to WWE, except I would be angry with what they did with her once she arrived.
They would make her into Isaac Yankum, female DDS.
Well, she'd be real good at that. Hey, we haven't talked much about the actual match, Jungle Boy and Darby Allin. What did you think?
I loved it, Mark. I thought they told a great story. I thought it was a great showcase for Jungle Boy Jack Perry. Darby, man, you're continuing to build this guy up as a champion. I love that they went down to the wire also. You know, they were pretty tight on that TV time remaining last night. And up until, yeah, you had me up until the schmoz at the end, man, because it really was just an awesome match. I even didn't mind the little deal where Luchasaurus and Sting fought off so that you can focus on the two cats in the ring.
Yeah, I thought that was actually a good move, but then when everybody arrived at the ring at match's end, you know, you almost forgot that they did something with the outside the ring brawling that made sense.
Yeah.
I thought, you know, they used Darby very well. Darby got no complaints, and he's very good. You forget how tiny he is. That's how good he is. And the looks good, the makeup, the tats, the skateboard. He is just one solid package.
Yeah.
They've criminally underutilized Jungle Boy. Criminally. I mean, he looks like a TV star. Specifically, like his dad,
yeah.
Luke Perry. And they have not emphasized or utilized or exploited that connection nearly enough. And if Jungle Boy doesn't want that, that's too bad. Because it would be what's best for business. But the kid looks like $1 million. He's got a good gimmick. His work is exemplary. They have criminally underutilized him. And I just hope that last night is the start of something big for him. By the way, where was Marco Stunt? That struck me as an absence that maybe should have been explained.
Yeah, where was Marco and all that? And, you know, it wasn't a matter of just having that evening of the odds deal with Sting and Luchasaurus out there, whatever the case may have been.
Well, you see, that's the problem with gangs, though, in groupings. Because
noticeably missing.
As we've discussed, Mike, three is not yet a gang. You need four. For example, Best Friends now qualify as a gang because they've added Chris Statlander.
Yep.
Who is an alien. They're the only gang with an alien. But the Jurassic Express is not quite a gang, but they are a grouping. And if you're a grouping, you need to have the whole grouping there all the time. Why was Marco Stunt not there? Why was Tully not there with the Pinnacle? again, there are cracks showing in the detail of the way they do things in AEW, and the devil's in the details. And if you don't adhere to the little things, not adhering to the big things is usually not far behind.
Yeah, I would agree with that. If you're not gonna, if you're gonna have a piece missing, you may as well have the rest of the backup gone from the equation, and you can easily set that story with your announcers. Well, look, these guys wanted it to be a pretty even match, so Darby told Sting to stay back, and Jungle Boy told Lucha and Marco to stay back. I'm still not quite sure
of the relationship between Sting and Darby, and I got to tell you, at the very end last night, just for a second, I thought Sting might turn. But they're not going to turn Sting. You can't turn Sting.
I thought about that too, if I'm being honest. I thought you were going to get that Sting Scorpion death drop on Darby at a certain point during the show, but you know, they didn't go there. They're kind of in and out and like weaving around. It seems like they are trying to interweave a lot of the storylines and kind of have talent intersect with folks that are in other stories, but it's sloppy.
Well, again, I've been pretty hard on AEW for the last couple of weeks, and indeed during today's podcast, Mike, it's because I see the cracks. The show's still good. The rating went over a million with no competition. No. The show's still good. It's still successful. But I recall once upon a time at a company I worked for where the ratings were still through the roof, and for the most part, it was a very good product, and you started to see the cracks, and nobody did anything about them.
Yeah, and you know, you don't want to see the company fail, because there really are just a lot of talented folks that are a part of that roster. And you know, the real estate, while there may be five viable companies, right? Like you hear the talk a lot about valuable real estate on TV. Not everyone in every other company is getting an opportunity to appear on TV every week. You know what I mean? Like you said, it's those spots are reserved for those that should be on there. And should AEW dissolve, there are a lot of folks that are going to find themselves without a place to work.
It's not going to absolve. The kid's not going to throw out his favorite Tonka truck.
Hey, look, you would imagine,
I mean,
though, at a certain point,
he may throw other stuff out of the crib, but he won't throw AEW.
Yeah,
out.
But Mark, you got to imagine his father's a businessman. You got to imagine at a certain point, should AEW not start, you know, showing a little profit in that, you know, that margin there, you cut your losses and you move on.
I will die long before AEW does. That's the guarantee. And I want to know too, Mike, that we talk about the other companies, but really WWE and AEW, unless I really miss my guess, are the only places where you can make a solid full-time living. I'm not sure that can be done in Ring of Honor, Impact, or MLW. I think you have to augment your income if you work there. For example, Josh Alexander of Impact, who I think is a great performer, I'm a big fan, he posted on Twitter his typical day. And it includes working a job from 6 a.m. till 3 p.m. I don't know what that job is, but he works every day in addition to wrestling. I assume it's a job that is willing to work with his wrestling career in terms of being able to, you know, go to Impact tapings and work indies and so forth. But there are some guys, and we shouldn't forget this, and we should admire them for it, who work wrestling part-time and a real job full-time.
Oh, yeah.
And again, to give Josh Alexander a lot of credit, for him to be as good as he is while working a full-time gig otherwise, it is great on his part.
Yeah, I mean, look, especially in the midst of COVID, right, Mark, a lot of folks in the business, especially like in the, if you want to call them the lower tier companies, and not meant to be disrespectful, you know, a lot of those guys, when shows were put to a halt because of COVID, had to find themselves looking for whatever sort of job they can get to make ends meet. You know, you and I both know a guy that I'm pretty tight with, Sam Adonis on the Indies. He's Corey Graves' little brother. Sam's had to supplement income, you know, by getting himself a regular job while getting back into wrestling, with wrestling kind of, you know, independent promotions are popping up and they're starting to do shows following COVID compliance, etc. But it's not an easy racket. You do have to kind of tip your hat off, because look, that takes dedication. That's that old school sort of drive to make it and to also support yourself.
And Sam's real good too. Sam should be somewhere. In fact, when I see some of the quote unquote talent that's on Dark After Dark, whatever the frig those shows are called, It makes me sick. In fact, he's better than some of the talent, a lot of the talent on the regular TV shows for all the companies. He should be somewhere.
Yeah, Sam's 6'4", maybe about 240, and he can move like a luchador. The stuff that the guy was doing in Mexico was unbelievable.
Himself. Forgive the interruption, but Sam did the Trump supporter gimmick in Mexico.
He made CNN. I think Don Lemon had him on and interviewed Sam.
I can't help but wonder if that hurts him trying to get a job in America now.
Maybe not. I'm not sure. He was part of the WWE developmental system for a while. He was actually signed to FCW before Graves was signed there.
Oh, I know. And we all remember Sterling James Keenan.
Oh, yeah.
Corey Graves is alter ego when he actually works. So, yeah, but I'm a big Sam fan. I'm glad actually that his name came up because he should be somewhere. Should have been somewhere a long time ago.
Yeah, and look, hopefully with things starting to kind of open back up and Sam getting back out there and grinding and doing what he does, hopefully folks in either of these companies, like I said, now you've got viable options with MLW, Impact, Ring of Honor, AEW, WWE. Pay attention, man, because that's a guy that could be a pretty worthwhile talent for you.
Mike, I got to tell a quick story. Sam ran a series of shows in Pittsburgh at this place called the Rex Theater.
Lucha Rex.
Concert venue.
Yeah.
Wrestle Rex,
okay? Yeah.
And the Rex closed during the pandemic, unfortunately. But I went to a couple of these shows. You should have seen them. The crowd was almost up against the ring. They pressed the guardrail to the apron. It was packed. It was sweaty. It was hot. It was dark. They had Penta there. They had his brother there. It was just brilliant. It was so much fun. And also, as a fat guy, they had great tacos from Las Palmas restaurant. It was just incredible stuff. I mean, seriously, you had Penta and his brother, the Lucha Brothers, wrestling in this little theater with the crowd pressed up against the apron. What a scene it was.
I mean, it's always great when you get that rock and roll feeling at a wrestling show, man. That's what I always loved about indies. I was always a big fan of the New York independent wrestling scene. It was just always a good time, and it just felt like you were at, like, I would liken it to being like, you know, being at CBGB during like the punk rock phase in New York back in the day.
Right, it was like a secret society, those kind of shows.
Yeah, you're at like an Elks Lodge somewhere in Queens, just packed in real tight, and everyone's just having a good time, and the boys are having a good time. Indie wrestling, man, you support it. Support indie wrestling. I can't stress that enough, folks.
No question, I do. I go to see IWC here in Pittsburgh, the place that spawned Wardlow, Dr. Britt Baker, Elias. I mean, I could go on and on. CM Punk worked there, Sammy Guevara. The first time I saw Sammy Guevara, he was like an 18-year-old kid working at an IWC show in Pittsburgh. He drove from Houston and lost money on the trip because he was pursuing his craft. That kid, I've always liked that kid because he has tremendous work ethic.
You can't teach that, Mark. That is something that can never be taught, work ethic. Can't.
No question. I wish I still had it.
So, Mark, you know, we've talked about the Gangs of Jacksonville.
Starring Daniel Day-Lewis.
Your clever moniker, the Gangs of... Well, who's Daniel Day-Lewis playing in this? Is he Tony Khan?
I think Tony would like to believe that, yes.
Hey, if I were making a movie about myself and I was funding it, Daniel Day-Lewis is playing Mike Mansuri, rest assured. We got...
Who could play me is dead. John Candy, Chris Farley, all gone.
Now, Philip Seymour Hoffman, even though he's passed, he would have made a great Mark Madden, by the way.
Oh, that's a good point. We'd have to settle now for Louis Anderson.
Hey, he's still kicking. We saw Coming to America.
Oh, that's right. Was that his premier role, probably, in movies? Don't get me wrong. I think the guy's funny as hell. But I thought he would have done more in movies. He was great in Coming to America.
Yeah, he was great. He made the sequel also. Did you see the sequel?
No, and I don't think I should, from what I hear.
No. Look, don't go into that thing expecting, you know, to see Citizen Kane. It's exactly what it needed to be. It was a feel-good, let's catch up movie. I loved it.
Now I want to watch Citizen Kane.
All right. Well, you know, if you got the time, I say do it. But Mark,
I don't watch baseball because it's too long. You know, I've never watched The Irishman, the Scorsese movie.
You don't have four and a half hours?
I just can't spare that amount of time.
That's all. I can't sit still for that long. People can see watching me do the YouTube. I can barely sit still as it is. That's a lot of attention to ask for in a very crowded world. But Mark, we do have a lot of factions in AEW. We've stressed that. Everyone's talked about it. But you know, let's go through some of them. You and I were talking about this a couple minutes ago.
Oh, rate the factions.
Yeah, let's go through. Let's talk. Well, let's talk about the factions.
Let me just throw one thing out there too before we do. One thing I've come to understand, remember how we talked a few weeks ago about how the storyline that reunited the Elite was a little bit rushed, correct? It felt that way, correct?
Yeah.
I was told, well, you have to watch Being the Elite, the YouTube show that the Bucks do and have done for years. You have to watch Being the Elite because that advanced the reunification of the Elite and it made it make more sense. Well, okay, what if I don't want to watch Being the Elite? What if I don't have time to watch Being the Elite? Okay, if indeed putting the Elite back together was based even a little bit on what happened on Being the Elite, that is not smart.
No.
Your Wednesday night show for AEW should be self-contained. Everything you need to know about the storylines and things like this, like the Elite, like that angle, should be on Wednesday night, period.
It should. And here's the thing, in terms of back promotion to it, you know, look, if I'm the network, if I'm TNT, and I'm hearing that content for the main show is being advanced through other channels, but, you know, we're not getting any representation of it, I'd be pissed. Why isn't that on my air? Why isn't that putting it on my air? But also for the AEW team, if you want to get more eyes on, you know, Being the Elite, and if you are going to progress storylines on there, you got to put a snippet of that on your TV. Let folks know that this thing exists. You can't assume that everyone in your audience knows every single thing about every single second about your show, because, you know, you're at a time now where you're going to attract new viewers. Wednesday nights, you're going unopposed now. Tuesday nights, NXT's unopposed now. You have to educate your audience as best you can. You cannot assume that they know. You can't.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I dabbled with Being the Elite. I watched a few episodes. It's too insidery, even for me. Too insidery. And we've talked about this a million times. I use Gallows and Anderson as the prime example. It's guys who think they're funny, doing things they think are funny. They're not funny, and it's not funny. I'll tell you much better, to my opinion, and everyone out there that loves the Elite, and I like the Elite too. I love the Jacksons, love those guys as workers, just don't like that show. But the Sammy Guevara vlog, and I'm a big fan of Sammy's, you know, full disclosure. The Sammy Guevara vlog is what Being the Elite thinks it is. It's much funnier. It's much hipper. Now the featured players aren't as prominent, but I like it better.
Yeah, I've seen a Sammy Guevara vlog or two. Sammy is an entertaining dude. I tell you what, going back to the Bucks real quick, and I noticed this last night watching Dynamite. I like that they're taking a very sharp turn into going into a new phase of their characters, and even in something as their street clothes. You know, they were wearing these outlandish like jumpers last night on the show, and just really kind of changing their presentation. I like that. Something like that, Mark, goes a long way in establishing what you're trying to do.
I think the Bucks have always been ahead of the game in terms of the way they present themselves. I think they're brilliant in that regard. The only thing that they do once in a while that aggravates me is they, like we talked about, the match with them against MJF and Jericho.
Yeah.
In the ring, they're so hungry to impress Meltzer that sometimes they just go against the grain of what should be being done. But yeah, I like the way the Bucks have updated their look. It's a more heel look. I think the promos they cut since Being the Elite, that they made All Elite Wrestling possible. They put the Elite in AEW. And the fact that that's totally true makes it all the better.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like you have to say, wow, that's kind of crappy to say, but it's right on the money.
Yeah. You know, look, if it weren't for the Young Bucks, for Kenny and for Cody and Jericho, there is no AEW. You're not building your company. Just like Jericho said on the, did you get a chance to watch the Jericho Austin interview yet?
Yeah, it was real good.
Yeah.
Really good.
But Chris talking about the pressure of being the guy and carrying AEW through those first couple months, you know, I'm sure that's something a lot of those guys, you know, in that initial grouping felt, you know, of pulling this thing up to the top of the mountain. There's truth there, and you can appreciate that.
I don't know if Chris ever felt the pressure as much as he said he did in that interview. I think maybe he thinks he did, but nobody I know has ever been more self-aware than Chris Jericho and more cognizant of his capabilities. And don't forget, when he went into AEW, I don't know if this has ever been said out loud, and he never said it directly to me either, but he has total creative control of everything he does and everything in his sphere. And I think that's very evident because it's all been flawless. I think the best part of AEW by far since the first day of its inception has been everything involving Chris Jericho, because he has final say. And sometimes a performer having final say is death. Exhibit A, Hulk Hogan.
Yeah.
Exhibit B, Bret Hart. With Chris Jericho, Chris knows what's best for him, but he also knows what's best, period.
Yeah, he's not above putting somebody over, even at his own expense, if it makes sense for business.
He's done it all the time.
Yeah.
So anyway, let's rip the gangs. I want to make fun of the gangs.
All right, so let's start. We'll start at the top. Let's start at the top, Mark. Let's start with the Elite.
The best gang. Can we rank top three? I can give you top three.
You want to go top three, bottom three?
Yeah, that's the bottom three will be more fun. So let's go top three first.
Let's go.
Okay, I think the top three are obviously the Elite, the Pinnacle, and the Inner Circle. And if you made me go in order, I would go Inner Circle number one because of Jericho. And then after that, it's tough because I think Kenny and Max are great central components of each of the other groups. I would probably give the Pinnacle the edge because, to be blunt, I like the bottom part of their roster more than I like the bottom part of the Elite's roster. I think up top it's pretty even. I would take Axe and Smash over Gallows and Anderson. Then again, you got the Young Bucks in there who I have very high regard for. I don't know. It's a tight race, but those are the top three.
It is a top race at the top. A tight race at the top. Jeez, it's been a long morning already.
It's a long way to the top if you want to rock and roll.
Amen, brother. Amen. I would say I agree with the top three. In terms of one to three, I got to go Inner Circle because I think across the board you've got better performers, better promos from start to finish with every member of that group. Second, I'm going to give to the Elite. I love Kenny and Callis together. I love what Callis is bringing out of the Young Bucks. Hopefully Gallows and Anderson catch up on the train as well, because I do think that they're strong performers. They just kind of need to really tighten it up for AEW and what they're doing.
They're strong in-ring performers.
Yeah, agreed.
They're good in-ring. And by the way, I got to tell you, let me revise. I go with Elite second because of Don.
Yeah.
And the fact that Tully wasn't there for the Pinnacle last night, Tully has to be there.
Well, for me, the Pinnacle is number three because I just don't know who they are yet as a collective outside of MJF. Right now, they're a group of talented guys that have a strong mouthpiece that all of a sudden just started wrestling similarly. I need to know more about...
You're right.
I need to know more about the collective because there is a lot of potential for that group there. Excuse me, but I need to know more about them as a collective, what they are, and it would be great to get more of that. You still got a couple of weeks getting into Blood and Guts, so let's really establish these guys and let's really get the idea of the Pinnacle over. Just because you've got members that are good, that are great, does not mean that what you're doing is over yet, and the Pinnacle is not over yet.
And all three groups are great, no question.
Yeah.
And if I went just off the board, I like the House of Hardy, or what does he call it, the Hardy Home Office.
Yeah, man.
Because Matt's so very good, and he's in there with guys who aren't great, and he is really elevating them.
I tell you what, man. You want to talk?
Private Party's actually pretty good. They're worthy of the elevation. The other two guys, they're just journeymen.
You talk about a guy that continues to reinvent himself, right? You know, when he showed up at AEW, everyone was loving getting the taste of the old TNA version of Broken Matt Hardy. But this money Matt Hardy character, man, it's entertaining, Double M. It's so entertaining.
Well, we saw a lot of that money Matt Hardy character in Ring of Honor.
I was stuck in the WWE bubble at the time.
One of the smartest guys in wrestling. He can constantly reinvent. He's very Jericho-esque in that regard.
He is absolutely brilliant and very undervalued and underappreciated in terms of that mind that exists in that man's head. Matt really, really, really is. He's ahead of the game in terms of what he can do. I mean, look, you gotta put cinematic matches on him, right? The Ultimate Deletion and all the stuff that he was doing at Impact, that all came from him.
And Boresh. Let's not leave Jeremy Boresh out of
Shout out, Jeremy. Well, yeah, look, I mean, look, that's one thing to have the idea, but you need the guy that can execute, and shout out JB.
Jeremy Boresh, when we worked together in WCW, had a very interesting collection of videos on his computer.
Oh, Jesus, that's a talk for another time off air.
Not even off the air. It's not.
Oh man, JV just such a talented dude. I was happy to get a chance to work with him during my last couple of years at WWE. Just an amazingly talented dude, and a smart grab by Triple H and the team down there in Orlando. Man, JB just brings a lot of value, and he's got the experience in the business. I mean, Mark, you knew him when he broke in.
Yeah, his side gig is NASA, if I'm not mistaken. He does some work for NASA.
If you follow his social media, man, the guy's a wizard with a camera. The pictures that he's been taking of all these space shuttle launches down in Florida, and just like the nighttime shots of like the moon and everything else, the guy's a fucking wizard. So yeah, if he's making money with NASA, I say, hey, NASA, be smart and sign JB.
I think he's the point man for an alien invasion, Mike. I think he's turned on humanity. And when they land like they do in Independence Day, he'll be the guy who kind of takes over as their human dictator. Hey, and I can't think of a better guy.
Somebody's got to be there to document the whole process. Why not get a phenomenal shooter like JB involved?
Who is your one group that's just off the top three in AEW? Who's your one group you think's pretty good?
I love the Death Triangle. And now, I guess, do you call them a quad? Do they officially qualify as a group, Mark, now that they've added Alex, the now heel Spanish commentator?
I guess technically, yes, they are a gang.
They now hit a foursome, right? I love the Death Triangle. I mean, look, the Lucha Bros are awesome. And that group featuring one of my absolute favorite performers, probably one of my favorite people to be around and just an incredible talent, Pac. The Bastard Pac. My God, man, what a talented trio of dudes now supported with a mouthpiece for Penta and Rey, and maybe even the group. I mean, look, Pac's strong suit was never his promo, so you give these guys a mouthpiece now, and man, I'd love to see that trio featured more, because holy shit, are they talented.
This Alex guy loves it too, doesn't he?
Oh man, you saw
he
him.
He loves it.
You saw him last night.
The microphone like a hungry dog attacks a bowl of food.
Oh man, you could see it last night, Double M, when he was cutting that backstage promo with Penta, where Penta said he's going to squeeze Orange Cassidy into orange juice, and even just kind of, he was very, it was a throwback like Jim Cornette, Bobby Heenan appearance at ringside last night. That presence of just like the over animated heel manager. I thought it was funny.
But the fact that it's sincere, it's not put on, it's not artificially animated, you could tell that's really him. He can't believe he's getting this chance.
That is genuine. Holy shit, I'm here.
Okay, let's do the fun part now. The worst gangs, three worst.
All right, fire off.
Well, I got two for sure, and I mentioned it earlier. That QT Marshall group, watching them is painful. It is painful. After you see them out there for 30 seconds, sweet death would be a blessing. There's just nothing there that's interesting. And if that Agogo has any potential, they will kill it stone dead in the womb.
Well,
it is this randomly matched group of guys who don't look alike. They don't talk alike. They shouldn't be on TV, period.
They're doing a great job.
And by the way, how come everybody else uses a metal chair to hit people with, and they suddenly out of nowhere found a wooden chair last night from the 30s.
Well, maybe Tony Khan watched Rocky 3 last night. You saw it worked when he hit Thunder Lips with the chair.
Yeah, but when you take something totally, and I know you're being sarcastic and I got sucked right in, when you do something that makes no sense, when it's totally out of context and the group ain't interesting to begin with, it's just awful. They're awful.
Yeah, well, what's hurting it, Mark? And here's the good thing that I liked. I think they're doing a great job of getting that liver punch over for a go-go, establishing the kid's finisher, which maybe it's the only thing he can do right now. It's green leading green. In that, look, I'm sure QT Marshall, I know QT spent time in the business and he's got, you know, he's been a bit of a journeyman, but in terms of main level exposure, he's green. And you've got,
how old do you think QT Marshall is? I don't know. Give me a guesstimate.
He's got to be 35, maybe 36.
At least 35, right?
Yeah, I mean, I'll look it up. I'll look it up here in a second.
And he's never been on TV till now, correct?
To my understanding, correct. I do believe he had a cup of coffee at Ring of Honor, maybe a little bit more than that, maybe two. But, you know, he's still, in my eyes, he's still green at this level of exposure and this level of work.
No, Mike, he's not green. He just sucks.
Mark, he's 35 years old. He's 35.
When you're 35 and you've never been on TV, there's a reason for that. That's not coincidence.
No, and then, but
And my second group in the bottom three, and these two are so bad, I'm having trouble coming up with the third, is the Dark Order. The Dark Order was very good with Brody Lee because he was a special, special talent.
Yes.
And now they're just a bunch of goofs. I mean, they turned them into comedy. And I guess there's some okay workers that Meltzer fawns over in that group. But they're just a bunch of goofs. And they're not doing Hangman Page any favors. And there's only so much he can do for them.
No, and it looks like they paired them. I think Hikaru Shida now has got some sort of affiliation with the Dark Order, yeah?
Well, Tay Conti does. I know that.
Tay Conti, that's what it was. Okay.
And the one woman, actually, who I think is pretty good, she got hurt. What was her name?
Oh, the woman, she just hurt her shoulder, right?
Yeah, she was affiliated with the Dark Order, too.
Her name escapes me right now.
Hey, don't mind us. I forgot Ray Phoenix's name a couple minutes ago. I kept calling
his brother. His brother. Yeah, yeah.
That was what I was doing here. I was like on the phone. Okay, Penta brother. Hope Mike doesn't see me.
Yeah, you know, Mark, they're floundering right now because it seems like they have nothing for the Dark Order outside of just putting them up with Hangman Adam Page to kind of keep them hot and keep them relevant. And it might be time to take a peek and see what's viable, what you can do something with, and what you might have to kind of trim, because it's, you know, you're at that point where you are getting silly. I want to double back, though, to the factory, right? That's QT Marshall's faction's name.
I guess so, yeah.
You've got Green leading Green. And you're not doing anyone any favors by having a Green leader lead three guys who are legitimately, you know, brand new to the business. I know Aaron Solo has done work on the indies for a few years now, but, you know, again, it's one thing to kind of have wrestling experience, but to be on national TV and to have that national TV pedigree is a completely different ball of wax. It's not the same game.
Mike, like I've often said, if you're on TV before you're ready, and it's very evident, the audience can never unsee that.
No.
You could turn into Lou Thesz somewhere down the road, and they'll remember how rotten you looked at the beginning. So these guys are not being done any favors by being put on TV before they're ready. And I think that applies triply to Anthony Ogogo, because given his athletic background and boxing pedigree, he might have some legitimate potential, but it's too early for him to be on TV. I'm not a big believer that you should pay your dues, because that's such a cliched statement.
Right.
But you shouldn't be on TV before you're ready. Some guys are ready very quickly, but the guys we're talking about aren't ready at all right now.
No, and it's, you know, it seems like with the Go-Go, they're hoping for a Kurt Angle situation, and you're not going to get it, man, because Kurt...
No, you're not going to get it, are you?
Kurt is once in a fucking lifetime, once in, you know, multi-generations, right? And the thing with Angle was, is that, you know, if you've seen any of the documentary stuff that WWE's done on Kurt and Kurt's podcast, the Kurt Angle podcast, Kurt spent time training before he actually made it on TV. And then once Kurt was on TV, right away, Kurt was mixed in and was doing programs with guys that knew how to work and that could lead him and help him grow.
And not long after that, he was calling the matches.
Yeah. I mean, what? The guy was world champion. Kurt was world champion within his first year?
Yeah. Kurt's a once-in-a-lifetime phenomenon in terms of adapting to the business like a fish going into water.
Yeah.
No question about that. He was amazing.
And a guy that within, what, 3 years, Mark, was probably one of the best, if not the best workers in the business.
And a great promo, too. And very unique in that he would show his ass and make himself look like a fool in almost every promo.
Yes.
And it did not hurt him one bit. In fact, it enhanced him.
Yeah, the layers of the Kurt Angle character. I mean, right from offset, right? Like with the three eyes and just being this overbearing guy of being an Olympic hero and everything else. I mean, you know, it's funny because he said in his documentary that Vince, you know, was like, "I'm gonna make you a heel," and he's like, "That's never gonna work. No one's gonna hate me." He's so easy to hate with the way he was rolled out. It was great, man. It was just absolutely awesome.
Yeah, I could talk about Kurt all day. I'm a big fan of the three eyes, by the way. I do the three eyes as a bit on my radio show quite a bit, because I think we could all use a little more intensity, intelligence,
and integrity. Amen.
I can't say enough good about the guy, both personally and professionally. I've known him dating back to when he played high school football in Mount Lebanon here in Pittsburgh. And he is just an exceptional talent, exceptional guy too. So, but no, Anthony Ogogo is not the next Kurt Angle.
No, you need to put him. If you're really going to try to invest and put a rocket on this kid's back and shoot him to the moon as your next star, you got to put him in the position to succeed, and you need to get him working with folks that know what they're doing.
Okay, who's the third bad group? We came up with two, and they're so bad. You know what could save the Dark Order? I said this a couple weeks ago. If Bray Wyatt would leave WWE and become their leader and reestablish them as the Dark Order, but I don't think that's going to happen. But who's your third group?
So this group makes it into the tier because, like, the gimmick to me is just silly. And it's a shame because the guys that are part of it are actually talented, and I'm going to give it to the Best Friends. The best. I've always been a big fan of Trent. I think Trent is an exceptional performer. Chucky T, another guy that's done the journey around the indies, big guy in PWG and everywhere else in between. Orange Cassidy obviously has got that love and that glow of the people. And I like Chris Statlander. There's something about Chris Statlander that I think is going to translate to some money at some point down the road. Just the packaging and the presentation of the best. It just seems Chucky and Trent fit it. Orange and Chris are on the periphery, and they're you need to get everyone on the same page if you're really going to make this thing work. You got to do something better.
And part of it is Best Friends. There's only two.
Right.
Okay. And Orange Cassidy. And I got to tell you, when I heard about him and when I first saw him, I hated it. But I grew to love it because I grew to get it. But part of his problem is once you've seen him, you've seen him.
Right.
There's no, at least not so far, maybe there will be eventually. And I guess they've added a few layers to his character over time. But they need to do some more with that. And I agree with you. I like those guys. And I think there's potential there, which there isn't with the other two groups. But I don't think the whole is as great as the sum of the parts, which is what you need a faction to be.
Yes. Yes. And if you're just putting them together, again, this seems like an instance where you're putting folks together or putting them into something that was, I guess, quasi-established and hoping that it works and that it'll raise everybody up. But it's not. It's not working at all. And to go to Orange Cassidy, that guy can go, man. And you're I get the gimmick as the nonchalant guy that, the light kicks to the shin and everything in the hands and the pockets, like, it's entertaining as fuck. But when it's time to go, he can go. Let me see that guy. Let me feature that guy more often. Put Chuck and Trent in the tag team title picture. Let's get Chris and
Patrick. Oh, they had that great parking lot match with Santana and Ortiz.
Oh, yeah. Is that the one where the guy stepped on the rake and he hit himself in the face with it, like the old Daffy Duck cartoons?
I don't remember that, but I hope it happened.
No, it wasn't. I think Ortiz took a plank of wood right to the face. Very similar to that, just the whole, just not good. Not a good scene. But you've got four talented folks just in the wrong situation right now. Change the creative for these folks and give them an opportunity to flourish because you're not doing them any favors as part of this faction.
But there's just too many factions. That's the heart of my complaint about all of this. There's too many factions and it's lazy. I defy anyone to tell me, that having 13 or 14 factions in a wrestling promotion is anything but extremely lazy booking.
Yeah. I mean, let's go through it, right? Because, what was it? Was it last week, Mark, that there were 75 folks on TV, including the trio of announcers?
2 weeks ago.
2 weeks ago, right? So you've got the Inner Circle. You've got the Pinnacle. You've got
the elite, the Hardy faction,
right? You've got the Hardy faction.
Best Friends.
You've got the Best Friends, the Nightmare Family, and then you have the Factory. So that's seven.
Dark Order.
Eight.
I counted 13 when I had everything in front of me. The Death Triangle.
Death Triangle, yeah. Now the Death Quadrant. There's a lot. There is an absolute an abundance of factions. Let's pare it down.
Oh, Team Taz.
That Christian Cage Will Hobbs match was pretty damn good. Team Taz has got great components. I love Brian Cage, man. That guy really is a fucking machine.
Oh, I like Team Taz.
Yeah.
I like Taz. I mean, I loved when Taz asked Christian Cage to be in Team Taz, and then when he refused, he said, "Well, I never wanted you anyway." that's great. Taz pulls that stuff off, has always done.
He's just the consummate heel, right?
Oh, absolutely. And like I said, their announce table is at their best when a heel is on it, and that heel is him. And I'm not saying depose any of the other guys. Hey, here's what I would do, and I've said this for a long time. When they get their second hour of TV, I would take my four best announcers, second TV program, rather. I would take my four best announcers, who are Shivani, Ross, Excalibur, and Taz, and split them up into two teams of two. That's what I would do.
I like that. And I think to kind of lessen the noise a little bit, Mark, and so you're not having four voices, and even though some folks will say, like, oh, you're kind of shitting on Excalibur or burying him, they're not to be necessarily Excalibur. I love the idea of Taz going out and doing commentary during the Team Taz matches. Have him kick somebody out the booth.
It's good heat for too Taz. Many guys on mic.
Yeah, good heat for Taz. Have him kick somebody out the booth.
I remember once in WCW, we had six people on mic at the same time. At the announce table. Oof. It was me, Hudson, Shivani, and what was the Conan group for a while? The Filthy Animals? The
Filthy Animals, yeah.
We had three members of the Filthy Animals on mic. I think it was Conan, Kidman, and Tigress, but I'm not sure. So guess what I did that segment? Didn't say one word. Just sat there.
Turned the headphones
because
down
what was
said
the
nothing.
Point?
No, you would have gotten lost. Yeah, that happened a few times in WWE where in a segment you'd have, you know, the three announcers on, and then I had two tag teams on. So you've got seven people on commentary. Made for a busy table, Mark. Made for a very busy table.
Well, seven's the record. If there were seven, that's the record.
Yeah, I believe at one point there were seven folks on commentary.
Well, then I give up the record, and that's something I cherish, and you've hurt me deeply, Mike.
You know, hopefully I was mistaken, so that your record stands, but I do believe seven at one point were present on commentary. But Mark, you know, a lot of folks have accused us of being AEW bashers, especially, you know, I'm sure we're going to hear the critics come out.
It's my favorite program. It's the only one I watch every week from beginning to end. A lot of the programs I like tape and fast forward. I watch it from beginning to end. But let me tell you, before I worked for WCW, it was my favorite promotion. Okay? TBS, 6:05 Saturday night. And it was the one I was most critical of because I wanted it to be better.
Yeah.
So don't say I'm an AEW basher. I just want it to be better.
And I feel the same way because it should be better. You know, I was excited when AEW was launching with the mission statement and everything else in between. I was really excited for what we were going to get. And keep in mind, I was in WWE when this was happening. My excitement was in the fact that, like, holy shit, we're finally going to get competition. Maybe this will turn things around. Maybe, you know, the competition will force our hand and force WWE to be better. But it seems like now, you know, what's the plan? You got to this point. What's your plan to get you over the next plateau? Because AEW has plateaued. And look, they had a rise in viewership. That's because they're unopposed on Wednesdays now. Can they do these 1.2 millions you know, consistently? And what are they going to do to get a new audience in? Because they have the potential to get the new audience in because they are the new kid on the block. They don't have that stigma that WWE has right now because WWE doesn't have a positive stigma in the wrestling business with wrestling audiences. What is AEW going to do to grow their audience and to really form a viable contender against Raw and SmackDown? Because now you're headed towards those waters of competing with the two flagships of WWE.
Yeah, no, totally agree. But again, to get back to my original point, you know, if I criticize something in most cases, I mean, hey, on my radio show, I'm a big Pittsburgh Penguins fan. I have been since I was 6 years old. And I criticize them as much as anybody because I want them to be better.
All right, Double M. We come to the end of the road. Another riveting episode of the best wrestling show, period.
It really was riveting.
Hey, man, I appreciate you as always. Thanks for wrapping up.
No, thank you, Mike. Great stuff as always. And we'll get back on schedule next week.
That's it, boys and girls. We will be back next week. Same bat time, same bat channel, our usual Tuesday release. In the meantime, you can follow us on social media, on Twitter, at Mr. Oh, Jesus Christmas. I can't even speak today. On Twitter, at Mr._Mansoury, MANSURY. He's at Mark Madden X. And follow us at the BWSP on Instagram and Twitter. And hit that subscription button. Hit that subscribe button on YouTube, man. Pay us a visit. You can get all of our video episodes in full. We put clips out over the weekend for you to enjoy in smaller doses. Just search The Best Wrestling Show, period, on Twitter. And enjoy and keep spreading the word, man, because this show has been growing because of the hard work of you folks out there educating the masses as we like to do. So until next week, I'm Mike Mansouri. He's Mark Madden. It's The Best Wrestling Show, period.